Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
We all hear it right. The love hormone, the cuddle chemical, oxytocin.
Yeah, those headlines grab you.
They do. And look, it definitely plays a part in those, you know, warm, fuzzy feelings.
Yeah.
But honestly, that's just scratching the surface.
Oh, absolutely. It's a tiny piece of a much bigger picture.
So today, we're going deep, really deep, into the actual story of oxytocin. We'll look at its surprisingly broad effects on your brain, your body.
We'll unpack some really compelling research, too, hinting at therapeutic uses.
Right. But we also need to get real about the downsides, the potential side effects.
Definitely need that balance.
And we'll even touch on what some big names, like Andrew Huberman, maybe Joe Rogan, Dr. Craig Conover, what they might have said or would likely say about it.
Sounds like a plan.
So if you're looking for the shortcut to genuinely understanding this molecule beyond the hype, let's dive in.
Okay, so what's really remarkable is how this single molecule gets simplified, doesn't it? Just romance, affection.
Yeah, totally.
When actually its influence on our biology is so fundamental, so multifaceted. So just to get everyone oriented, oxytocin is a neuropeptide.
Okay, neuropeptide. What does that actually mean in simple terms?
Think of it like a double agent, kind of. It acts as a hormone.
Traveling through the bloodstream, right, to different parts of the body.
Exactly. But it's also a neurotransmitter.
Ah, so sending quick messages between nerve cells right there in the brain.
Precisely. Fast communication. It originates way deep in the brain, in the hypothalamus. Crucial command center, that.
Uh-huh.
And then it gets stored and released by its neighbor, the pituitary gland. Tiny thing, but powerful.
And chemically, is it complex?
Right, structurally, it's actually quite elegant, I'd say. Just 9 amino acids linked together.
9. Okay, so not just some fleeting feeling in a molecule then.
Yeah.
Much more foundational.
Definitely.
Let's map out its territory, the stuff we've known for a while, and then maybe explore those newer, more surprising areas.
Good idea. So the classical functions, childbirth is the big one.
Right, uterine contractions. That's why they use penicillin, the synthetic version, to help with labor.
Exactly. Critical role there. And then lactation. It triggers the milk ejection reflex.
The letdown. Makes breastfeeding work.
Yep. And then, of course, the bonding aspect.
The one everyone talks about.
Right. Mother-infant bonding is key, but also romantic partners, even our wider social circles. It helps build that trust, that empathy.
And kind of calms down social anxiety. Makes us less jittery around others.
That's a big part of it, yeah. Reducing social fear.
So if you look at those established roles, it's all about reproduction and sticking together socially, isn't it? Pretty fundamental for us as a species.
Absolutely fundamental. Survival stuff, really. But like you said, the story gets really interesting when you look at the emerging research.
Okay, tell me more.
Well, there's a lot building around stress and anxiety management.
How so?
It seems to help lower cortisol levels, you know, your main stress hormone.
Right.
And it also seems to modulate the activity in the amygdala.
The brain's fear center, essentially. So it kind of turns down the volume on fear.
That's a good way to put it. Tempers that response. And then there are these other intriguing hints. Maybe a role in appetite regulation, metabolism.
Really?
Metabolism. Yeah. And even though this is very early days, some potential link to wound healing.
Wow. Okay.
And we definitely know it's involved in sexual behavior, arousal, orgasm. It's part of that complex mix, too.
That is a lot for one little molecule. Okay, so let's dig into some of the studies that suggest, you know, actual therapeutic uses. You mentioned ASD, autism spectrum disorder.
Yes, that's an area with quite a bit of research buzz. They're looking at using oxytocin nasal sprays.
Nasal sprays. Interesting delivery method.
It gets it towards the brain more directly. Now, it's really important to be clear here. The results are mixed. It's not a cure-all by any means.
Okay, managing expectations. Got it.
But several studies, including proper randomized controlled trials, do show potential. For some individuals with ASD, it might improve social cognition. Things like making more eye contact, getting better at reading other people's emotions, maybe communicating more effectively in social situations.
So not fixing everything, but maybe helping with specific social hurdles.
Exactly. It seems to target certain social processing mechanisms, maybe making it easier to navigate those social cues. It's promising.
That specificity is key.
Yeah.
Okay, what about other mental health areas? You mentioned anxiety earlier.
Right. The research there is also pretty compelling. Again, intranasal oxytocin. Studies suggest it can reduce social anxiety, make people feel more trust, more closeness.
Boost mood generally.
Yeah, improve mood overall seems possible. And the likely reason goes back to what we said, lowering cortisol, calming that amygdala response to things that feel like social threats.
It's like it's creating a biological feeling of safety in social settings, maybe.
That could be part of it, sense of it's okay.
Hmm. And thinking about trauma, PTSD. That must be incredibly tough, dealing with intense fear, intrusive thoughts. Is there any hope there?
There's early research, yes. Preliminary studies suggest oxytocin might help lessen those fear responses, maybe reduce those intrusive thoughts.
How would it do that?
The thinking is it might influence how fear memories get consolidated, how they're stored, potentially making treatments like exposure therapy work better.
That could genuinely change lives if it pans out.
It really could. And building on that social connection theme, couples therapy.
Ah, interesting. Can it help partners bond better or fight less?
Well, researchers have looked into that. Using intranasal oxytocin, the findings suggest it might nudge communication towards more positive patterns.
Or empathy between them.
Potentially, yes. Increasing empathy, reducing conflict behaviors, it could be a useful tool alongside traditional therapy.
It really is painting a picture of a molecule with fingers in many pies, so to speak.
Yeah, that's one way to put it.
And just to round that out, you mentioned ongoing research, substance use disorders, pain.
Yeah, still exploring those. For substance use, the idea is maybe it modulates the brain's reward pathways, you know, the circuits involved in pleasure and motivation. Could it reduce cravings, perhaps? It's being investigated.
And pain management.
Also under investigation. And then, of course, we absolutely cannot forget its day job, its established critical success in obstetrics and gynecology.
Inducing labor, stopping postpartum hemorrhage, life-saving stuff.
Exactly. That undeniable potency really highlights why we also need to talk about the other side of the coin.
The potential side effects.
Right.
Because anything powerful enough to start labor must have downsides too.
Precisely. So in that labor and delivery setting, using Pitocin, if the dose isn't quite right or the response is too strong, you can get uterine hyperstimulation.
Meaning the contractions are too strong or too close together.
Yes, and that carries a risk for the baby, potential fetal distress. Other side effects can include nausea, vomiting for the mother, headaches, blood pressure changes.
Anything more serious?
Rarely things like water intoxication, because oxytocin has a mild effect on kidney function, or even very rarely uterine rupture. Especially if there are other risk factors.
Okay, those are definitely significant things to consider in that context. What about the nasal sprays used in research? Lower doses, different setting. Are the side effects different?
Generally, yes. They tend to be milder in research settings. People might report some temporary nasal irritation or dryness from the spray itself.
Makes sense.
Maybe a headache, some mild nausea. And interestingly, sometimes changes in mood or anxiety.
Changes how? Better or worse?
Often reported as positive, actually, which fits with the potential benefits we discussed. More calm, more connected. However,
it's always a however.
There often is. Some studies have flagged a potential issue. In people who already have anxiety disorders, sometimes intranasal oxytocin might paradoxically increase anxiety, especially if they aren't being closely watched.
So it really depends on the individual's baseline.
Very much so. Individual variability is huge. And critically, we're still gathering long-term safety data for chronic, repeated intranasal use. We just don't have the full picture yet.
And certainly not for people just buying stuff online and using it without medical supervision.
Absolutely not. The full spectrum of side effects from non-medical unregulated use is largely unknown and potentially risky.
Okay, that's crucial context. So with all the science laid out, let's think about how some of those well-known figures might discuss it. Andrew Huberman, for instance. He goes so deep into neuroscience, hormones, behavior.
Yeah, Huberman. You'd expect him to focus squarely on the mechanisms, wouldn't you?
Totally. How it actually works in the brain.
Exactly. He'd likely talk about oxytocin in the context of social bonding, how it helps form those connections at a neural level, empathy, stress modulation.
The neurobiology of it all.
Precisely. I doubt he'd do a whole show just on oxytocin, maybe, but it would definitely weave into his broader discussions on attachment theory, the science of touch, managing social anxiety, the neurochemistry of love, that kind of thing.
And always grounded in the published research, differentiating between natural release and, say, therapeutic nasal sprays.
Absolutely. Evidence-based, mechanism-focused, that's his brand.
Okay. Now, shift gears. Joe Rogan. His podcast is, well, a different beast altogether. Huge audience, very broad topics.
Yeah, Rogan's show. It covers so much ground. Fitness, MMA, nutrition, psychedelics, sometimes pretty controversial health takes.
Right. So a deep dive into oxytocin pharmacology seems less likely.
Probably less likely as a dedicated topic, I'd agree. I mean, could it come up? Sure. If he had a guest on, a neuroscientist or psychologist talking about human connection or well-being.
It might get a mention?
It might get a mention, yeah. Mm-hmm. But a focused, detailed discussion. Probably not his usual focus area.
Fair enough. Okay, finally, Dr. Craig Conover. His world is much more about precision and medicine, optimizing health, peptide therapies.
Now that's where oxytocin becomes highly relevant from a practical application standpoint.
Because it's a peptide and he works with those.
Exactly. Given his focus on targeted interventions for optimizing health, performance, well-being, oxytocin fits right in. Its potential for stress reduction, enhancing social connection, improving mood and anxiety.
Those are all targets for optimization.
Absolutely. So he'd likely be very interested in its therapeutic potential. But crucially, he would emphasize using it under physician guidance.
Right. Personalization, careful dosing, monitoring.
Precisely. The precision medicine approach. He's acknowledged its potential in discussions around well-being and the importance of connection for overall health. So definitely on his radar within a proper medical framework.
Okay, that connects the science to potential real-world application, albeit carefully managed.
Yep.
So as we kind of wrap up this deep dive,
yeah,
it's crystal clear, isn't it? Oxytocin is vastly more complex and influential than just the love hormone label suggests.
Oh, completely. It's this incredibly versatile neuropeptide shaping our social lives, our emotions, but also impacting, you know, basic physiological processes, even metabolism, potentially healing. It's involved everywhere.
And the evidence is building, isn't it? For potential therapeutic uses in really challenging areas like ASD, anxiety disorders, PTSD.
It is. Alongside, of course, its absolutely vital established roles in childbirth and lactation. We can't forget those foundational uses.
But we've hit on a few times, caution is key. Especially when we talk about taking it exogenously, you know, from outside the body.
Absolutely. The side effect potential, the need for more long-term data, the risks of unsupervised use. It all points towards needing careful medical guidance.
It really highlights this amazing, intricate dance between our biology, these molecules, and our social and emotional experiences, doesn't it?
It truly does. How fundamental these chemicals are to how we connect, how we feel, how we navigate the world.
Exactly. And maybe that's the final thought to leave you with. Just consider how these seemingly simple biological molecules can have such profound, such multifaceted impacts on our social reality, our mental states.
Makes you wonder.
It does. What other subtle biological currents might be shaping our daily lives, our interactions, our feelings, in ways we haven't even begun to fully understand? Definitely something to think about. Thanks for taking this deep dive with us.